Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Let's see.
Here's John Williams.
Keep score at home. Let's see if he does. He's got 3 hours. Hi, it's John. It's 9:12 on WGN. I'm here weekdays from 9 to noon. Appreciate your tuning into the show. Remember, the number is 312-981-7200. Call or text if you hear something you like. If you don't, I'll give you Dave Ennett's home email address.
Yeah, that's fine.
It is 9:12. By the way, it's weird because today's Thursday. The Bears play tonight, right?
Yes, they do.
And they played last Thursday. Mm-hmm. That completely throws off my sync. It's Sunday, 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 with an occasional Monday or Thursday, but two Thursdays in a row, I'm wobbling still from Thanksgiving. This is not healthy for my clock. It's just not. It's not right for me.
You can adjust.
By the way, our news click at WGNradio.com, our daily web poll question. If the Bears make the playoffs, dot, 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 you get three options. Think about this. If the Bears somehow make the playoffs, A, hey, miracles happen. I'm in. I'm cheering. Or B, I'm jeering. I'm done with this team. I don't even care. Bring on baseball. You can't emotionally get behind this team, even if they win again tonight. Or C, stop it. They're not going to be in the postseason. I'll eat your hat if they do. And that got half of the votes. Eat your hat.
Oh, okay.
That got half of the votes. 15% of you said, I'm jeering, I'm done, just bring on baseball, I don't even want this team anymore. And 37% of you at WGNradio.com have said, hey, miracles happen. If this team can pull it off, I'm there. I don't know if I got off the bus, but I'm back on it. I can find that place in my heart to cheer for this team. Dave Ennett, where are you? Go.
Oh, I think if they make the playoffs, if they win this game, they get a little bit closer. They still need help.
Yeah,
they do have a little bit of control in that they still have a game remaining with the Vikings. But if they're in the playoffs, I don't believe that people are going to throw up their hands and say, I'm not cheering for them.
But it'll be such a whiplash because people have been nothing but critical of the coach, critical of the ownership and the management, certainly the quarterback. We're mad at the defense. We're mad at everybody. And if we start to win, I just think it's funny to people going, well, you know, I'm kind of happy about this.
Would you care? Would you prefer the kind of whiplash that, like, the Cubs gave us in 2018 when they won 95 games and then got knocked out in the wild card game?
No.
I mean, I think you would much prefer this scenario where maybe you struggle, but then you get things together late in the year. And I've seen it happen twice, John, with the Bears before. I'm old enough to remember.
Where left him for dead and they resurrect.
1977.
Wow.
I know it's going back a ways. Okay. In 1979, both years, they were 3-5. Both years, they pretty much won out to make the playoffs.
How about
and,
that?
And in 1979, they probably should have advanced. They got knocked out by Philadelphia.
There's a bizarre story about what an announcer said in an NFL game Sunday. Or
no, on a talk show.
Pick it up here in just a minute.
Okay.
919 WGN. Hey, John, who's paying for all of those real ID commercials on your radio station? Is that the taxpayers? Can people be so unaware? There are many ads on WGN radio. Could you please discuss this? Signed, Rick. Yeah, the taxpayers are paying for it, Rick, and I don't think it's money wasted. I think people are in a dread panic about this thing. And we've been talking about it on the show this week and last week, and we will for the rest of our lives. And I think they need to spend, I don't know what the commercials are costing them or how much they're spending, but this is a conundrum for a lot of people. And the ads are fine. I don't think they solve a lot of the problems or answer a lot of the questions you want. I hear those ads and just go, okay, yeah, that's something I got to do. I have until next November. And I could wait past November, you know, October, really. I have until next October. And if I wait into November of next year, I'll still be okay if I have a passport, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah, you and I are paying for those commercials. By the way, Chicagoans sent handmade cards to loved ones and have for 100 years. Christmas has changed dramatically over the past century. Hallmark, the e-card. Now, blanket social media blasts, even Christmas lights have evolved from candles and incandescent bulbs to LEDs that twinkle on command. But there's one tradition that has remained, opening a box of Anderson's candy for Christmas. Anderson's Candy Shop was founded here in Chicago 100 Christmases ago, and it's been a hometown tradition ever since. Today, the Anderson's family and staff still make all of their chocolate in small batches by hand, because the Andersons know that whether you are biting into one of their chocolate bars, truffles, or traditional boxed candies, every bite has to be the very best, because you have to earn 100 years. So visit AndersonsCandyShop.com. AndersonsCandyShop.com. Place your order today. Andersons ships all over the country. They help corporate clients of all sizes, too. That's AndersonsCandyShop.com, because Chicagoland knows for the last 100 years, nothing beats these treats. 921. Our news click is about the Bears. Walter Jacobson's commentary in a couple of minutes is about how the media in this town has been treating Mitch Trubisky and the Bears generally, too. But what happened with this 49ers announcer? What was the story on that?
Yeah. So Tim Ryan is the radio analyst for the San Francisco 49ers. If the name's familiar, he played at one time for the Bears, he was a defensive lineman in the NFL for a number of years. And he made a comment, I believe, on an interview on the 49ers radio station, not during a game, where he alluded to the skin color of Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson. And here's basically what he said. He said that Jackson is very good at being able to fake handoffs because of his skin color. He's African-American.
The ball is brown.
Suggested,
he's brown.
Yeah, a dark football and a dark uniform. You couldn't see it. So he was suspended for the next game by the team. And he also issued an apology in which he said, I regret my choice of words in trying to... I bet he does, in trying to describe the conditions of the game.
He's been suspended.
He has been suspended.
Is he African-American?
He is not.
Yeah.
It's... just
I don't know if that's true. Like, if you're wearing a dark uniform, maybe, I don't know, if the uniform's dark brown. I probably shouldn't go down that rabbit hole of does he have a point there. The point is, that's a stupid point. Lamar Jackson is not a good football player this year because of the color of his skin.
No, I mean, Lamar Jackson is an outstanding football player.
He's making people crazy how good he is.
And look, I mean, the point of football is deception. And I talk about this a lot, because if you're watching a game, you'll see occasionally the TV camera will follow the wrong guy.
Yeah, oh, sure, absolutely.
And I do it myself when I'm doing a game.
I was a spotter for you at a Northwestern game, and I was pointing out things that weren't happening to
you. You know how tough it is, and and here's the thing. You got guys who are basically 5 feet from each other.
Okay.
And you're trying to deceive them.
Oh, I've noticed that, but I mean, so suppose, in fact, him in a dark uniform, being an African-American, holding a brown football, makes it a little more difficult for guys to know where the ball is on defense. I don't know that that point is so salient that you should utter it in this day and age, or any day and age, right? I mean, it's suggesting that that's part of his advantage, or is his advantage, and he's just crazy talented.
It would also be kind of suggesting that every African-American quarterback who wears a dark uniform would have an advantage. And, Lamar Jackson is just a terrific talent in the NFL. Not everybody's at his level.
People have said worse things. I don't think this cost him his job.
No, it didn't cost him his job.
Well, he was suspended, right?
He was suspended for one game.
One game.
Yeah.
Okay.
He should just be suspended for being dumb.
Mary.
There you go, Mary.
I mean,
that's what I'm thinking. If he gets in trouble, it's not because he made a racist remark.
No,
it's because he made a stupid remark.
The team said in their statement, we hold Tim to a high standard as a representative of our organization. He must be more thoughtful with his words.
Well, agreed? That's it. Mars. If you're the car guy,
and we know him as a man of high integrity. We're confident he will grow and learn from this experience.
Different topic. Alan wanted to jump here about the real ID. Hey, Alan, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Good morning, John.
Hey.
Hey. I was wondering, I remember my wife and my daughter and my son, well, we all got passports. Would it be easier to get a passport instead of a real ID? I've been listening to your show for a few days now, and all these women seem to be having problem with their maiden name and their married name.
Is your
but
wife?
I don't remember having problem getting a passport for my daughter, my wife, or my wife.
Yeah,
would it be easier?
Is this your wife's first marriage?
Correct. First yeah. and only, I hope.
Well, put her on the line. We'll figure that out. I don't know the answer to that. I guess it depends on, do you have your documents? If you have a passport will work as a real ID, number one. That is, you can't drive with it, but if you're going to fly, your passport will be just as effective as a real ID. So, you know, don't panic if you don't have it next October, if you have a passport. Some people are looking at the expiration date on their passport. They've got several years left, so they're not worried about it at all. I'm trying to remember the documents you need, and it seems to me like it's a similar roundup. You need, you know, a utility bill, you need a birth certificate, a marriage certificate, stuff like that. So I'm not exactly sure what to tell you. I think it's about the same.
Okay. Well, yeah, the reason I brought that up is we don't have a problem. My family is, we all have passports, but people, I've been listening to your show for
the
past few days, and people, especially women, seem like they're having a problem with maiden names. And
right, and women who have been married and divorced and then married again, because you need to follow the trail. If you need each of the marriage certificates to prove how your name got there. Alan, I'm out of time. It's nice of you to call. Thanks for listening. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
What I do, like at Rosemont or McCormick, because they give those cars front row parking also.
Yeah.
I drive a Volkswagen Jetta that's not electric. I take the cord off, I open the trunk, I throw it in the trunk, I close the lid on it, and I go inside. They can't move it. They'll tear the cord right
you
off.
You don't do that.
Oh, yes, I do.
Wait a minute. You have an internal combustion engine. You take the cord out for the electric car, you put it in your trunk?
I just did, and I slammed the lid on it. So it's still connected, but it's in my car. They can't move my car.
Say
nobody
again?
Uses it.
Yeah,
they're always open.
That is true. That is true. Thank you for that advice. You're going to hell,
okay.
You know, but that's an interesting thing you said.
All right, I'll see you there, Jeff.
I love traffic. I love the colors, yellow and green. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things.
Oh. Yeah. 941 WGN. You know, those electric carports for your car, you charge them up. It's usually near the front door of the malls and the stores. This guy has an internal combustion engine. He's driving a Volkswagen. So he pretends like his car's electric. He takes the electric charging cord, puts it in his trunk, closes the lid on his trunk. He says, hey, I'm charging my car. I get to park up front like everybody, like the fancy people. He says, what are they going to do? They can't pull the cord out because it's buckled into my trunk. He said he really does that. I don't that much want to park close to the front that I'm willing to go to that level.
That seems a little extreme.
The busiest travel days of the year, Thanksgiving and the day before or after. And there was a couple of stories in the news this morning about how people were lined up a half mile long at the Tesla charging stations around the country between San Francisco and Los Angeles and other places because they're all going to grandma's and they're electric cars and they know there are charging stations along the way, but there are only so many. And so the line would be a half mile long waiting to rejuice your car. And it's not like then you just squirt some gas in there and you go. You got to sit there and wait for the car to recharge. Several minutes, 20, 30, 40 minutes, depending on how much you need, da-da-da-da-da. I've fallen in love with the idea of electric cars this week, but now I'm starting to rethink it just based on that story alone.
It's going to take you forever to get anywhere. I think that's what happens when you have to charge all the time.
Yeah. I mean, if you've always got enough charge and you can budget it so you charge overnight and you don't have to get in those lines, that's fine.
Yeah, or if you're not in a hurry, you know, you're just taking your time to get somewhere.
Previously, a guy called in and he asked us about what's easier to get, a passport or real ID. I said it's kind of a push. They both require about the same amount of paperwork. Several of you reminded me, and I'll read this on the air. Hey, John, it's much more expensive to get a passport. That's true. 630, passport's far more expensive, John. 920, does the passport card work as a real ID? We have a lot of, I don't remember the answer to that question, but on my Facebook page, I'm WGN King John. We posted a lot of your questions with the answers from the Secretary of State's office last week. And I know that was one of the questions we answered there. So if that's of issue to you, you might want to check that out. 815 said, thank you, Walter Jacobson. Thank you. Go Bears. It's 9:43. The House is moving forward with impeachment proceedings. You heard here live on WGN Radio earlier this morning that the Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, said that they will go forward with this. That's no great surprise. It was interesting. Lynn Sweet in the Chicago Sun-Times today noted that while there were four professors that testified yesterday, historical constitutional experts, I thought they were all really interesting people. If you cared to, you learned a lot about America and government and our Constitution and how it works and what the Founding Fathers meant. But there wasn't agreement amongst all of them. The Republicans were able to call somebody up. And the guy that they called is a University of Chicago Northwestern guy. He was really good. His mom was watching from the north side. And we will play a little of what he said and then a little bit of what she said, the point and counterpoint, in just a few minutes. But props to him for getting... And he's the same guy that testified, Jonathan Turley, when Bill Clinton was getting impeached. Three presidents have been impeached, none of them convicted. Johnson, Clinton, obviously... And, well, I guess Trump would be the third, right? It's 9:44 on WGN. 847 said, hey, you said mostly cloudy. There's one cloud in the sky. It's beautiful. Let me look out here. Downtown Chicago, yeah, it's pretty much blue skies.
Yeah, I don't see that cloud.
Little wispy white. I'm confused sometimes. Actually, I'm not confused. My theory is that when they say from the Weather Service, partly cloudy, that means mostly sunny. If you have a sky and it's partly cloudy, that means it's going to be mostly sunny or blue, right? But you hear the word clouds and you go, oh, it's going to be cloudy today. I think whenever the forecast, Dave, says partly cloudy, we should say mostly sunny.
Well, what about partly sunny?
Partly sunny would be mostly cloudy.
Okay.
Really, the glass is half full.
Yeah.
The American Lung Association is a driving life is driving life saving change. The American Lung Association is driving life. Oh, I got it. Okay, hold on. 3, 2, 1. When we're live, I'll get this correct. Okay. The American Lung Association is driving life-saving change. Lung cancer remains the number one cancer killer of men and women in the United States. To help save lives, the American Lung Association funds millions of dollars of research every year and remains dedicated to finding a cure. Your car donation will help fund their research and save lives. Donate your car today. Help the Lung Association drive life-saving changes. Call 800-LUNG-CARS or visit lungcars.org. The American Lung Association, driving life-saving change. Now, that sounds better. It's 9:49 on WGN. Good morning. This is John Williams. Hope you're having a good day. Yesterday, when the House was conducting the judiciary hearings on the impeachment, Nancy Pelosi just moments ago said live here on WGN Radio and across the world that the impeachment will proceed of President Donald Trump. You and I might guess what the outcome of that will be, but they are still going to go forward. And there were four professors that testified. Lynn Sweet in the Sun-Times today wrote an interesting piece, just a little bio, if you will, of one of them that testified, and that was Professor Jonathan Turley, raised on Chicago's North Side, a law professor, the only GOP witness at the Judiciary Trump impeachment hearing yesterday.
He's probably the most familiar to people who watch the Talking Head TV shows.
I've not seen him before, but he's terrific.
Yeah.
I don't watch much Talking Head TV. I don't watch any. But he was really good, don't you think, Steve Bertrand?
Yeah, he's very thoughtful.
Yeah, well, there's that. And in fact, as Sweet put in the Sun-Times today, he called strikes for both sides. He was the Republicans' witness, but he said, I'm no fan of Donald Trump. I didn't vote for Donald Trump. He said, I don't even know if you should impeach Donald Trump if you have sufficient evidence, but you don't have sufficient evidence right now. He said, we're going way too quickly on this. In fact, well, let's let him put it the way he wants to say it. This is Turley from yesterday.
It's Tim. My personal views of President Trump are as irrelevant to my impeachment testimony as they should be to your impeachment vote. I'm concerned about lowering impeachment standards to fit a paucity of evidence and an abundance of anger. I believe this impeachment not only fails to satisfy the standard of past impeachments, but would create a dangerous precedent for future impeachments. This impeachment would rival the Johnson impeachment as the shortest in history. This would be the first impeachment in history where there would be considerable debate and, in my view, not compelling evidence of the commission of a crime. Second is the abbreviated period of this investigation, which is problematic and puzzling. This is a facially incomplete and inadequate record in order to impeach a president. Allow me to be candid in my closing remarks because we have limited time. I get it. You're mad. The president's mad. My Republican friends are mad. My Democratic friends are mad. Will a slipshod impeachment make us less mad? Will it only invite an invitation for the madness to follow every future administration? That is why this is wrong. It's not wrong because President Trump is right. His call was anything but perfect. It's wrong because this is not how you impeach an American president.
How about that? That's one side of it. That's the Republicans' witness. There were three others. One of them was Pamela Carlin, and this was her perspective.
Imagine living in a part of Louisiana or Texas that's prone to devastating hurricanes and flooding. What would you think if you lived there and your governor asked for a meeting with the president to discuss getting disaster aid that Congress has provided for? What would you think if that president said, I would like you to do us a favor. I'll meet with you, and I'll send the disaster relief once you brand my opponent a criminal. Wouldn't you know in your gut that such a president had abused his office, that he'd betrayed the national interest, and that he was trying to corrupt the electoral process? I believe that the evidentiary record shows wrongful acts on that scale here. It shows a president who delayed meeting a foreign leader and providing assistance that Congress and his own advisors agreed serves our national interest in promoting democracy and in limiting Russian aggression. Saying, Russia, if you're listening, you know, a president who cared about the Constitution would say, Russia, if you're listening, butt out of our elections. And it shows a president who did this to strong-arm a foreign leader into smearing one of the president's opponents in our ongoing election season. That's not politics as usual, at least not in the United States or not in any mature democracy.
So it went back and forth like that yesterday, and Nancy Pelosi says we will proceed with the impeachment hearings. We'll keep you posted on that. News comes your way in 6 minutes. 630 texted in about Real ID. John, at the same time as your Real ID segment yesterday, I was standing in a long line at my local DMV. I studied the website. I had everything I thought I needed. I was turned away because my birth certificate did not have a seal on it. I really wish the Secretary of State website would be a little more specific. I was amazed at how many people in line in front of me had no clue as to what they needed to bring. I'm going to get a passport only due to the hassle of waiting in these long lines. And it's only going to get worse. A guy texted in yesterday that works for the Secretary of State's office, and he said, please, people, I do not want to be the guy. No, it was the Secretary of State. It was a guy that's at the airport, the ATF guy. Not ATF. Who's the guy?
TSA.
TSA. Get a lot of letters here. The TSA guy. He said, I don't want to be the guy telling you you can't get on the plane because you don't have real ID. And we will tell you that next October. But you don't have to rush out and do it today. You don't have to rush out. Have you got your, Mr. Traveler?
I do not.
You do not.
Well,
you
but
got,
I will
you got
soon.
Time. You got time. Now, Brenda and I tried to get the global entry, which helps you sort of cut in line.
I have that.
That, you talk about having to wait. We both filled out our forms because we travel a little bit. And you go online and then they say, okay, here's your information. And it's kind of detailed. When did you work? Where did you work? Who are you married? Lots of historical stuff about you. And then you hit submit, and then you have to get an interview. And in the interview, that's when they stamp your documents, look you in the eyeball, make sure you're not a terrorist.
They fingerprint you.
They do that. And I was sweating, and I was answering questions wrong. Like, have you ever been arrested? And I go, well. And he's like,
what do you mean by arrested?
I know, and I've never been arrested. But I thought, well, I've been pulled over. So I was just so nervous about it. Anyway, Brenda and I do everything at the same time. I get my real ID about a month later. It was about 6 months before Brenda got even a chance to schedule an interview. And then she had to wait a couple more months for that. You'd like to, as a couple traveling together, be able to do things at the same time. Anyway, WGN. Good morning. John Williams here. We're watching the news, the traffic, the weather, the sports, and some of the shopping trends that are going on in Chicago, too. A little later on, we'll talk about some of the best gifts. You know what I think, though, Steve? Brenda and I are going to get the kids, well, at least my one son. My one son doesn't drive a car. The other one does. But tell me if this is a good gift or stocking stuff.
Okay.
A portable battery charger for your car.
A portable battery charger for your car? You mean for your car's battery?
Yeah. I was walking down the sidewalk the other day, and my neighbor and his wife had their heads under the hood and said, what's going on? And they said, the battery died. I said, oh, man, because I don't have jumper cables. I did, but I didn't want to jump them, so that's what you say. And it's a shame because he's a pastor, too, and he's a terrific guy.
I'm sure he is.
But then he
frostbitten,
tells,
but
he tells his wife, he says, well, the battery charger's under the seat. And I thought, you don't have a battery charger under the seat, but what is that even, what are you talking about? She reaches under the driver's seat, and the size of a purse, I mean, it's the size, it's maybe 8 inches long and 2 inches deep and 4 inches tall. It's just the smallest thing, and it's a little kit. And he said, this will recharge my van. This will recharge a small bus. He opens up the hood, takes the battery charger out. It's like a battery, micro battery, with a charge in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hook it to the cables up. And you kind of shield your eyes away because you don't want it to blow up and put acid on your face. And then, broom, the car starts up. And the thing is that big. I mean, it's not the size of a car battery.
How much is it?
He said his, he got it like a Costco or Sam's Club, was under $100.
Wow.
I was doodling around online, and the ones I was finding were more than that. But he said, I think he said his was like $60 or $70.
I'm pretty sure my husband bought one of those for one of my sons.
I think it is amazing that you have one of those.
Yeah.
And then and then you need it, and then it works. All those things need to line up. But to be that proactive, and then it works, and that it's charged and ready to go.
Yeah, especially if you're driving around with little kids in the car. You know, and something happens like that.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to have.
I think that, and you know, I don't know that that's a new sweater or tickets to Hamilton. I don't know what people give for gifts these days in your household. There's a lot of things you can give. A battery charger. Hey, people want robot vacuums, so maybe a battery charger isn't such a bad idea. But this, I didn't know that these things that small were that efficient and effective. And I thought, hey, let's check that box. By the way, Javier, you're on WGN. What's going on?
Yeah, so the thing you're talking about, I bought one of those 2 years ago on QVC, made by, I mean, Cobra. I don't know if that's, I'm not plugging in, but
yeah.
At any rate, it's the size of like you said, like twice the size of the big Matchbox, you know, Matchboxes, you know?
Yeah.
The ones to buy. And you charge it up at home, for it takes like an hour to charge, and you keep it in the car, and it lasts, you could stay like that in the car for like 5 months. I've jumped at least 5 cars in the last year and a half where I see people pulled over, and they're, you know, I could see someone saying, nodding their head that, nope, it's not starting. And I pull over and I'm like, hey, man, you need to jump? They go, yeah. And I just pull over and I walk out. They go, where are your cables? I said, I don't need cables. And I got the two little things you put on the battery,
yeah.
And boom.
That's the thing.
I jump started a school bus once.
So the pastor who is jump starting his car does have a bus for his school and church, and he says he started a dead as a doornail bus with this thing. So instead of having to get the two cars lined up in traffic and then get the cables out, you just pop the hood, plug this little sucker in, and boom, it starts up.
Yeah, and it's much safer because you don't have to have a car that, you know, that's blocking traffic going,
yeah,
coming in that,
yeah,
direction.
Yeah.
And with jumper cables, if you don't know what you're doing, you can, if someone touches the jumper thing, the what do you call it, the big spark will come out, you know? So
yeah, that's, yeah, where I'm always a little nervous. So I was jumping a car with my son and daughter-in-law a couple weeks ago, and they were letting me do the cables, standing back a safe distance, and I'm just waiting for one of those suckers. They have a, generally now, a nice piece of paper on the cable saying, here's the order in which you do them. But there's,
right,
a moment of truth when you do that last cable, isn't there, Javier?
Right. And also, what people don't know is when you jump a car, you know, the negative, it doesn't have to go on the battery. It can go on any part of the metal in the engine. Right.
Yeah, just get it on the block, yeah.
Anything on metal. Yeah, but this thing I paid $65 for, the best $65 spent in the last 25 years.
How about that? Hey, I appreciate you listening. You've been very helpful. Thanks, Javier.
I can't really get to my positive post in my car.
Really?
Yeah, it's very difficult.
you have a battery and it's positioned in a way that gets it difficult to get to the
positive? Yeah, I've had occasion to try to charge someone else's car, and it's I don't know if I ended up giving up on it, but it was like, yeah, it was I had to take off a part or something like that.
Kathy, you're on boy, that's amazing. What kind of car is that? You driving a fancy car?
Ford Escape.
That's not a fancy car. Kathy, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hello. On Black Friday, Menards had those battery chargers for $79.
That's what I'm talking about. It was
and they are fantastic. My husband actually bought his about 4 or 5 years ago at Home Depot, paid about the same amount for the charger. His has USB ports on them.
Yeah.
It touched his phone when sitting in the hospital waiting for somebody, surgery or whatever, and his phone was dying. He charged his phone on it. It's so lightweight, he carries it in his backpack.
My neighbor's the same way. He had all kinds of ports for phones and things like that, too. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And it jumped a 15-passenger van one day. So
how about that?
They are wonderful.
Kathy, you have a nice day. Thanks for the help on that.
All right. Thank you.
Menards, huh? $79, she said, on Black Friday. And one more here. Hey, Dave, jump in there. You're on WGN.
Yeah, that thing is freaking awesome. I drove on a dead battery for about 4 months before I got another battery. I also gave it to my 20-year-old daughter, who took a trip to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Gave it to her. She didn't use it, but just the peace of mind with that. And the fix a flat. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
You know, let her go. It takes just the load off my mind. So just love that thing.
How about that? Dave, thanks for the phone call. Happy holidays to you.
Hey, love your show.
Appreciate you listening. Love you too, sir. It's 10:15 on WGN. What was the other thing we were going to do? Oh, yes. When we come back, answer this question for me. Have you noticed dogs inside bars, restaurants, and stores more now, lately? And what do you think about that? So I'm looking at this story. I was able to find one version of this story in the Tribune last year. Dog owners, there are rules for shopping with Fido, even in pet-friendly stores. This was about a year ago in the Tribune. I haven't seen anything since, but I have noticed more lately people bringing their dogs into businesses.
And just expecting us to accept it.
I was at the Zachary Hotel, Steve, you know, over by where I live, and and we were there to get a drink and have some light food with some friends. So it's the restaurant bar on the second level of the hotel. You're overlooking Clark and Wrigley Field there. It's a nice place to go hang out, whatever. And as I'm coming along there, I'm walking along the bar to the table, and a lady is sitting at the bar with her drink and her friend. She's holding the leash. The dog has wandered across the aisle through some tables. So for me to get where I'm going, I have to walk under, around, or over the leash.
That's just crazy.
And I'm like, lady, could you curb your dog here in the hotel restaurant? But that's... And I saw a lot more of this, I thought, in Minnesota. I don't know if my wife remembers it the way I do, so she's probably right.
I've been seeing them in grocery stores.
This is the thing, and people get ticked because dogs sometimes sniff things in grocery stores you don't want somebody's dog's nose on, you or your food. A Harris poll says 95% of us consider our pets family members. And there's this population of people now that want to bring their pets with them.
Yeah, some people won't go anywhere anymore if they cannot bring their dog. They're like, well, can I come over to your house and bring your dog? No. But then they don't come. It's weird. I don't get it. It never used to be the case.
I'm not put off by it like some people are. Like if I'm at a Hartley, and I think there's some stores that you get, right? Like if it's a big box store with a concrete floor and wide aisles, that doesn't bother me. If it's a hardware store, that seems to be a place for dogs. Landscaping, dogs. Restaurant, I'm not so sure. I'm not going to get bent out of shape about it as long as the dog's not bothering me. But I think some people don't want to sit next to a dog when they're having a drink or eating a meal.
I'm becoming more accepting of it, but less than you. I don't think there's any reason why I should walk around my hardware store. I don't know why they should be able to bring dogs.
When you see a dog, when you guys see a dog, don't you do this?
No.
Yeah. See, I don't either because I'm afraid of some dogs because I got bit by a dog once, pretty bad, and I still am a little leery. Even when I go running on a prairie path or whatever and people just take over the path with their dog.
Right.
It's like, move over.
I'm always careful going around the dog because that dog gets startled. They might just lunge out at you.
And you can't blame the dog. You got to blame the owner.
It's 100% agree.
That's what sidewalks are for.
People
dogs
walk,
and people, not prairie paths.
I think sometimes people walk dogs into their in stores like they're like, oh, aren't we cute? Look at us.
Yeah,
you know?
There's a little bit
they
of
want
that.
You to say that.
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel about purse dogs?
Oh.
I mean, I know that, but at least those people, the dog's not on the floor. If they're holding it in their coat or in their little carry tote.
At a restaurant, you mean?
Wherever. I mean, to me, at least that's a little show-offy, but it's also a little less obtrusive. So
it's still a animal.
You don't want them in there.
Somebody had a mouse in their purse or a pet rat. I mean, yeah. You know?
Mary, nobody's walking their pet rat around
the
jewel.
People have rats as pets, though.
I might start doing that. That could be a way to counter it.
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
Is that Pete McMurray on line 9, producer Ella? Okay. Should we take Pete?
Did you hang up on him?
Do you guys want to take Pete or not? We don't have to take Pete.
He's going to go against us, I think.
No, that's why I don't know if I want to take this call. Yeah. Hello, you're on WGN.
Wow, I just left Home Depot on North Avenue, and there was 3 dogs there, and I thought to myself, what's going on here? I don't understand why people, I have a dog, I love my dog, but I'm not bringing him to Home Depot. Leave your dog at home.
What did the dog do to bother you?
Nothing. It was just standing there. We're waiting for the checkout, and I'm like, wait a second, what's going on here? People want to bring their dogs everywhere. Dogs don't want to be at a hardware store. Sure, they want to hang out. We have a tremendous amount of guilt. As dog owners.
There's a little bit of that. I think that's part of it, Pete, particularly in this day and age. Pete, what kind of dog was it?
There was 2 dogs. I saw a black, looked like a mutt, and there was this huge, hairy, white dog standing next to me, and I'm allergic to long hair. So it was bothering me, John.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate the call.
I love you.
I'll see you later. I love you, too. Thank you, Pete McMurray. I'm not getting any love. I thought I'd have a parade behind me. I think people see dogs and they go, oh. I mean, I see that there is that group of people, too. John, you're on WGN. Go ahead, John. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I'm 58 years old. I've had dogs since I was born, and I love all my dogs, and I literally have rescued 3 dogs. Dogs do not belong in any business for any reason whatsoever. I was on a first-class flight on United. Then my passenger next door to me came in with a dog and had the dog there for the meal and everything else.
There's no
necessary reason other than if someone needs it for, you know, for the specific reasons for a disability or otherwise. But beyond that, dogs nowhere in any business. When I see a dog in a business, I will turn around and go out.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, because I think they're trying to cater to people that want to bring their pets with them, but they're losing people like John. Thanks for the call, John. Line 3 is Barb. What do you want to say, Barb? You're on the air.
Hi, John.
Hi.
I was just in a Home Depot myself last week, and there was a family there, and a little girl was holding the dog on a leash. It was a small dog. And just right in front of me, the dog takes a pee next to the poinsettia plant in the floor.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah. So
clean up on aisle 6.
I'm not a fan either of having them in the stores.
Thanks for the call, Barb.
Did they have signs on the store that say dogs allowed?
I mean,
how do people know they can bring their dogs in?
I have never seen that, but I also have not seen no dogs allowed. I think people just kind of show up with dogs
lately. Just do it and see what happens.
Yeah.
See if they're going to get kicked out.
Pam, you're on WGN.
Yes. I think they should not be allowed in public places, restaurants, and in confined things. You never know how they can react. I've seen from miniatures to Great Danes, children holding on to them. As you said, some of them get loose. Some of them don't like a stranger coming up. Realize when you're walking your own dog outside and someone wants to come. Normally, they're not always happy. And then there's the issue of going to the restroom. And there are a lot of people who have allergies. I have pets. I have cats. I have a dog. My kids grew up with pets, but never in a million years would I have thought to bring them into a public facility.
I think a lot of us were raised that way, and I think times are changing. That's kind of why I brought it up, Pam. Thanks for the call. I don't want to make this a boomer millennial thing, but I do think there's a younger generation that like somebody else said, maybe they've got guilt. The dog's in the apartment or condo all day long. They love their dog. It's part of the family. They're delaying having kids. They want to bring their pet with them. Annette, you're on WGN Radio. What do you want to say, Annette? Hi.
Hi, Jen. First of all, the ones I see bringing in the dogs are older people.
Okay.
I'm 58, and it's people my age or older, like they have to have the dog with them. I work at the post office. I work at the front counter. A lady came in the other day with one on a leash, and it snarled at a man, and she got mad at the man because he got upset. And I went to my postmaster. I said, isn't it just service dogs only in the post office? She said, yes. And where are the signs that say just service dog only? It's also a health department issue. It used to be always be a health department issue. You couldn't have a dog in a restaurant around food and just a safety issue. You never know what these dogs are going to do.
I was at a restaurant the other day, brunch, two dogs, big dogs, just lying there at the owner's feet. I'm out of time. I love the call. Annette, I appreciate your help on that. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. I think I'm like the president. If I'm going to get impeached, let's go. Let's get it over with.
Rip the Band-Aid off?
Absolutely. I think about this when sometimes people are delaying a trial and the outcome. I think if I'm going to be found guilty, you know, or not, if it's just an unpleasant eventuality, I want to start it right now and get it over with.
Go to prison then?
Or endure a Senate trial and not go to prison.
But, no, I meant your personal criminal trial.
Well, yeah, right. And then start my sentence early. Because say we put off the trial, say the impeachment of the president or my having to, you know, go before a judge or jury for something. The time in between now and that process, I'm not going to enjoy it, right? Like I'll be free, but I'll be miserable.
Right.
I would rather just get it over with and either be found not guilty or start my sentence and get out sooner. Right?
Sure. Well, the House is going to rip the Band-Aid off because I think their goal is within 2 weeks to have this done.
Which is what the professor, again, from Chicago, we played a clip from him, Jonathan Turley, the guy from Chicago.
George Washington University, I think.
Chicago Latin High School here, and then the University of Chicago as well. And he said that he's not saying Trump is guilty or innocent. In fact, he said he did not vote for Trump. He didn't say who he voted for or how he feels about Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. He said, my opinion about the man doesn't matter. What I do have an opinion about is that you guys are going too fast here without having explored all of the evidence and all of the options. That's my take on what he said. And I think that's fairly accurate, sort of retelling.
He said that it said that they're going a little too quickly.
Yeah.
He was one of four.
Yes.
The other three didn't.
Well, but that's because the Judiciary Committee said that the Republicans could only have one witness. You could have stacked it the other way, too. I don't know what the, you know, historic, if you polled 1,000, like they do economists sometimes, if you polled 1,000 constitutional experts, what they would all say about the propriety that the House is demonstrating here. I don't know how that would shake out.
Right.
It was funny also yesterday because they were saying, okay, well, here's what the Founding Fathers said. And at one point, one of the Republicans said, this is crazy. You don't know what Madison or Washington or Jefferson or Adams or any of them would have said or done about this. Although some of the professors on the other side said, oh, yes, we do. We have their words. They had meaning. And then they said, well, but that's not what it meant then and what it means now.
That was a particularly funny argument from that Republican, because there's a whole wing of the Republican Party that are, you know, the Federalists, the group, the Federalists. They're all about, well, you know this with Jefferson.
Sure. He's
all about what the Founding Fathers would have been thinking and applying it now. When someone comes up for the Supreme Court, you know, are you an originalist? Do you follow what the Founding Fathers said?
Yeah.
So for the ranking member yesterday to say that, you know, that's ridiculous to do. We do that all of the time, and Republicans more often than Democrats.
It's interesting to me, though, that if you just, and again, I don't know what 1,000 of them would say, maybe it's 99-1 or 80-20, but it is interesting to find Professor Turley really articulate, really smart, really principled, say one thing, and then say Professor Pamela Carlin come up and say something quite different, right? People who are equally studied, equally smart, equally articulate, equally sincere, and have quite different interpretations of what the process has been like.
Right. Well, it's a big deal, right? It's a big issue. So you're going to have smart people having different views of it. Now, Turley didn't say that he shouldn't be impeached, right?
Correct. Correct.
He just said he didn't like the way it's being done.
It's going way too fast for him. He said this is the bar is way too low for future presidents if you're going to do it this way. In Chicago, meanwhile, here's a headline from the Sun-Times the other day. City Council Ethics Committee approves lobbying ban. Now, I'm a little intrigued by this. There's an ordinance in Chicago that says no elected official or employee may lobby the state, the county, or any other unit of government in the state or derive any income or compensation from lobbying. The intersection of public service and private business in the Chicago City Council is insane. And it's a new wrinkle to me. This comes from Representative Luis Arroyo, the Democrat from Chicago, who resigned last month, 1 week after his arrest on federal bribery charges. It's a new wrinkle to me that lawmakers will be lobbying, you know, not for private firms, but for other bodies of government. So you could have a state lawmaker lobby a city council member, or a city council member lobby a state lawmaker because the city wants money from the state. If one of them is lobbying on behalf of one group for the other, it seems to me like there's an inherent conflict of interest there. Alderman Michelle Smith is behind this, and she joins us on WGN. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm just great. Thank you for inviting me.
Talk to me a little bit about this. What is it that got you all thinking about this?
Well, listen, Chicago has had a long history of having elected officials who also have private jobs as lobbyists. And who they lobby on behalf of is private clients. So what we're trying to put a stake in the heart of that is that practice. That is, of an alderman, in our case, or another elected official lobbying another government on behalf of private interests. So what could happen is, and what this leads to, is the proverbial, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. So that, for example, someone who is needs something, you know, some let's say, state rep, can come to Chicago and say, listen, you know, if you help my private client, you know, I'll vote for you for something that you might need in Springfield. And then the person from Chicago, theoretically, could say, hey, go to Springfield and say, hey, if you do something for my client, I'll reciprocate.
Right. Well,
so that's how public and private interest gets mixed. And that's wrong. I mean, it's perfectly okay, just to clarify, it's perfectly okay for me to get on a bus with a bunch of other lawmakers, go down to Springfield and say, on behalf of the city of Chicago,
right,
we think you need to spend money to help build roads.
That's horse trading, you know? And we're all used to that. If in fact, that's compromise. I have some legislation I want. You have some legislative needs in the city or state. So let's come to some accommodation. You help me, I help you. But it's where if I'm getting money to represent a private individual or company's interest, that's the problem here, right?
Yes, that's not about the public's interest. That's about yourself and lining the pockets of your private interests. And
yeah,
they usually are moneyed interests, right? So, and that's not right.
Well, I am thinking, too, of members of the Chicago City Council who are lawyers. They have law firms. And mm-hmm. if I want to get my property taxes reduced, say, I'll go to them. And it seems to me like that's a problem, too. I'm worried about city council members with private financial interests. What do you think about that whole area?
Well, I completely agree with you, and we've actually, I think, made a lot of progress to solving that problem. So right after my committee was formed, which is the first time we've ever had an ethics and government oversight committee in Chicago City Council. So as soon as we were formed, the first problem that we went at was exactly that issue, the issue of lawyers using their position to potentially get legal business. And so we passed a law in July that says you as a lawyer cannot represent anybody who could have an interest that puts you against the city, including reducing your property taxes, which shifts the burden from one person to another.
Yep, yep, yep. No doubt about it.
So we've now outlawed the practice of City of Chicago attorneys representing people who are trying to get property tax relief.
Yeah, but are you also doing that for aldermen themselves? That is, if Ed Burke has a law firm and I want to get my property taxes reduced, I'll go to him. Maybe my property taxes get reduced. But then as a member of the city council, where he's working for me, lowering my property taxes, he's passing the burden on to other people in his ward or the city. I don't think an alderman should be in that position. So are you going to keep that practice from happening?
Yes, that practice has just been made illegal. It was passed in July, and it was effective 120 days later. So it is now in effect. And, in fact, with regard to Alderman Burke, he left the law firm. He separated himself from his law firm, which is why he's still, I mean, had he not done that, he could have been prosecuted for heavy ethics violations that have substantial fines. But it was a major step, and several other attorneys changed their practices. We also recently had a ruling from the Board of Ethics under that provision that lawyers with criminal defense practices can't represent criminal defendants because they would be cross-examining Chicago police officers.
Exactly. Hold the line for just a second, Michelle, if you don't mind. Michelle Smith's from the 43rd Ward in Chicago. There's a couple of other things in the news I'd like your opinion on. One is about marijuana. The other one is about the police superintendent. Let's just finish this conversation in a minute on WGN. The House has passed or is proceeding with impeachment hearings for the president. Actually, the hearings are over. They're now actually going to draft articles of impeachment. The Judiciary Committee, as I understand it, will be doing that. A dozen or so lawmakers and attorneys behind scenes, they'll come up with articles. They'll try and winnow it down to something they think that they can get the president convicted on. It'll go on to the Senate. But Nancy Pelosi spoke this morning. You heard it live, maybe on WGN Radio, and the procedure is proceeding. It's 10:46 on WGN. We're taking a few minutes here just to visit with an alderman on the Chicago City Council, and we're talking about Michelle Smith in the 43rd Ward, not just about the lobbying rules and regulations that they've passed, but also I wanted to ask her about Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson. Before we do all of that, though, Michelle, you said this is the first time that the Chicago City Council has had some sort of ethics oversight committee. Is that right?
That's correct. It was just formed when the Lightfoot administration came in, and I'm the chair of it, and it's a real honor to do it. I'm a former federal prosecutor, and I've worked on ethics issues my entire term, and it's great that there is the impetus for change now.
Do you agree with the way the mayor has handled Eddie Johnson and his dismissal?
Yes, I do.
Do you think that it's been a fair process for him?
Yes. I will say, from my shared experience being in the U.S. Attorney's Office, I recognized exactly how she felt. You know, when you're working with someone, usually witnesses, we don't like surprises, and we don't like not being able to deal with the facts as they really are. So I think had the superintendent leveled from the beginning of what had really happened that day, I'm sure that none of this that's happening now would have happened.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to say that. When asked about that, Mayor Lightfoot said that she said on this radio station a couple of days ago that it was the action, not the lie, but the lie made it worse. But even if he had been truthful, she would have asked him for his dismissal either way.
I don't know if he would have been allowed to just retire at that moment and resign. But when you work with someone in a position of trust, the person who trusted you is embarrassed when you breach it.
I understand that.
It spills over.
Yeah.
And that's really, that is the problem that we have when we are expected to participate in someone else's embarrassment or improper conduct, or, you know, especially from a position of trust as an elected official.
Do you know exactly what happened? Have you seen the video, or are you privy to what exactly happened?
No, I'm not.
Eric Zorn said in his column in the Tribune today that, you know, somebody might work 30 years for the people of Chicago and then have his worst day ever. And maybe it's not. That's why I use the word fair. And Eric kind of vacillated on this point. I don't recall him taking a side, but maybe it's not fair to judge Eddie Johnson by his worst day, his worst moment.
In fact, I don't. I wouldn't judge him on the basis of that. However, he has to step down. I mean, I would not judge his career as the basis of his last day. I think he's been a good police superintendent in many, many ways.
Yeah.
But this is not, I think people concluded it was time for him to retire because of his health issues and a lot of other things. And it's too bad it had to end this way, but I don't think he will be judged on the basis of this final moment. And that's really up to the public, the media, and everybody else. The question is, are we obligated to cover it up? That's my question. Hmm. Are we obligated to cover it up when a person does something that's kind of stupid? Well, you tell me in today's culture whether that is what we do and whether we should be doing that.
Well, I guess it depends on what the it is, right? So if it's the person he was having a drink with, this is maybe a fault more of the media's than the mayor's. She tried to bury that point, but I don't think it's any of our business who he was having a drink with.
That's correct.
If he's lying about being inebriated, or for that matter, if the police officers gave him a pass, then you've got a couple of issues for us all to deal with there. It's 10:51, and you're suffering from what sounds like a cough, Michelle. Is that correct?
No, just one little cough.
Okay, because I've got a little bit of that, and I thought I don't want to keep you any longer than you can, but I wondered if you just had a minute about the marijuana retail points that we're going to have at the first of the year and some of the rules and regulations about where you can and where you can't smoke. What do you see coming down the road on that?
I think that where we are right now is a good place. You know, we've taken a how many decades long effort against smoking in public places to the point of relegating cigarette smokers to areas, you know, 15 feet away from their building.
Yeah.
And of course, people who aren't smokers don't even like that, right? Because you have to walk through that haze of smoke as you are walking down the path. We've become more and more aware of the health effects. So marijuana is a drug that is still technically illegal in the United States, and while we have decriminalized it here, it is still, you know, we still haven't had a national consensus on it. So I think it is fair to say, you know, do things out of your own business in the comfort of your own home, and, you know, don't burden other people with it. I think that's the balance that we're going to have to take. I am personally very uncomfortable about marijuana. I come from a generation in which a lot of people were damaged by drugs, and ensuing generations have still been damaged by drugs. So, and alcohol, right? So we have to be very careful about how those kind of institutions are licensed, and it's going to happen. So we're going to be very careful if we come to the point of having to license.
I think it's going to be very interesting when the Chicago police have to enforce some of these laws. There's a story in the paper this morning. Chicago cops are being encouraged to explain the new law to residents caught violating it rather than take punitive measures right away, particularly in the initial months. But the law will define a public place, and you cannot be seen smoking marijuana in a public place as anywhere where a person could reasonably be expected to be observed by others. That means you can't get high in the park or in a school. You can't be walking down the sidewalk and getting high on the street. The police department will issue citations to users on private porches, balconies, or backyards that can be seen by neighbors or passersby. And I just think that's going to be a whole world of trouble for the police if they're going to try and enforce something like that.
Well, I think that we'll have to massage it as it goes along. So what you've described, except for the private porches, is very similar to the rules we have for drinking in the public way. You are not allowed to drink in public. You're actually not allowed to drink in our parks or our beaches. And the police know how to enforce that, right? I mean, some they use their discretion. Sometimes they go, you know, you're not allowed that.
Yeah, right.
And sometimes they take it. And then if it's bad, you know that they're going to get arrested. So I think that there is a role for police discretion. And I think that that's actually very advanced policing for people for them to spread the word.
Yeah, right. So don't issue the tickets right away. Just say, hey, next time, you know, come March, we're not going to be so nice about it. January 1st, maybe we'll give you a pass.
That's correct. I think that that's actually responsible policing and letting people to have a lot of notice. You know, we put up signs, you know, all this sort of stuff. Having the police tell you that is kind of getting your warning the first time you know, are pulled over for a traffic stop and you have some reasonable excuse like, oh, I'm new around here. Well, okay. Police have always used discretion, often properly, sometimes not properly, but in the main, these discretionary calls are what are expected of police officers.
Alderman Michelle Smith's from the 43rd Ward. I'm really glad that they have that committee. Sounds like you're the right person to chair it. It's nice to talk to you today. Let's visit down the road again, Michelle.
Love to do so. Thank you so much.
Have a good day. Appreciate your time. President just tweeted, Nancy Pelosi just had a fit. Steve Bertrand will talk about what the president's upset about, or at least something about, I presume, the impeachment proceedings. Steve, am I correct?
Go ahead.
About
what else you want me to put in the news? Let me know.
Well, I would imagine that would be part of it. I was just scanning Twitter and saw that pop up. WGN Radio News right around the corner with Steve Bertrand. Also a topic that is coming to Illinois, and that is, do you have to work to get your SNAP benefits? If you want food stamps, should you have to work 20, 30 hours a week? We'll talk a little bit about that after WGN Radio News. And the News Click is going to be a new one. We change it every day, but I know what it's going to be. Is it, are you cool with dogs in restaurants, bars, and businesses?
Happy holidays.
Oh, shoot. I just hit it twice and we lost it. This is WGN Chicago. Good morning. It's John Williams here weekdays from 9 to noon. And on Facebook, WGN King John. Well, another day, another batch of questions about Real ID. And while I mention it once in a while, I'm not doing anything about it today, but I do remind you that we did a frequently asked questions segment with the Secretary of State's office, and that's on the front of my Facebook page. Go to WGN King John on Facebook, and that might help you there. Otherwise, just go to their website, do your best, do your homework, get all the documents, get
your
blood
home.
and good luck to you all on that. You know, it wouldn't be so imminent, it wouldn't be like so urgent if Illinois had gotten its ducks in a row a long time ago. The federal law that said you have to have something like Real ID was passed a long time ago, and Illinois didn't want to do it. And now we're up against the wall. If you consider 11 months of time to go downtown or uptown or crosstown up against the wall. But that's where we are. We talked a little while ago about how do you feel about pets in businesses, restaurants, and bars. Our News Click is going to ask you about that. Producer Aleph, tell us when that's up and we'll let people know. John, I would rather have dogs in restaurants or bars than some people's children. They're better behaved. A lot of you are saying things like that today. Actually, a lot of you are commenting on pets that you're seeing more frequently when you're out shopping or dining or drinking these days. But so far, most of you are not digging it. And I'm a little surprised because I'm pretty agnostic about this sort of thing. But I haven't seen any scenes. I haven't seen anybody admonishing anybody. And a lot of you are really upset about it, it sounds like. You do not like this trend. Somebody said this is the height of entitlement these days. A guy walked into a shop, let his dog just run around the shop because that's what he did without a care for how the customers or the shop owners felt. About Real ID, John, is it true that seniors get to go to the front of the line? My understanding is yes. We asked Dave Drucker about that from the Secretary of State's office. He said veterans and seniors, as a courtesy, are allowed to skip the queue. If there's a bunch of seniors in front of you, I don't know what they do then. It seems to me like there's mostly senior citizens at these places.
If they bring, like, the bus from Lexington, it's not your day to go.
I don't know if they say, all right, how old are you? How old are you? How old are you?
Yeah.
Oldest ones go first.
Senior, right.
It's 11:10. I'll tell you the soundbite that's getting the most action online and on the cable news shows today is after Nancy Pelosi spoke. This is my understanding of how it went. She made a brief statement about why the House is going to continue to proceed with the impeachment proceedings of the president. They're going to drop articles. So what exactly will those be? We'll find out maybe next week, right? But as she's walking away, a journalist from Sinclair Broadcasting, that's the same company that was going to buy this radio station until the FCC nixed it. They didn't think that they were being completely transparent about how the process was going to go down. And so we did not get to be owned by this company called Sinclair. But they're this company that leans conservatively editorially. So one of their reporters had a question for Nancy Pelosi. And the guy asked essentially, this is, Elif's going to play the soundbite. I haven't heard it, but I think I know how this goes. The guy is saying something like, do you hate the president? That's what this is all about.
I resent your using the word hate in a sentence that addresses me. I don't hate anyone. I was raised in a way that is full, a heart full of love, and always prayed for the president. And I still pray for the president. I pray for the president all the time. So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that.
That's the soundbite that's getting some attention today from Speaker Pelosi. She said, I'm not doing it because I hate the president. I think this is a constitutional crisis and we have to deal with it. Okay. It's 11:12 on WGN. It's Thursday, by the way. So the Bears play tonight for the second Thursday in a row. Sam Panionovich, who handicaps sports for us, said, okay, here's the line on the game. Here's how many points are going to be scored. Here's what you need to watch if you're watching the game. If the Bears are going to have a chance to win, this has to happen. Our news click yesterday, the one that we're taking down now and putting up the new one about dogs in public places. Yesterday, we asked you, how do you feel about the Bears? And if they make the playoffs, will you be able to enjoy it? Making the playoffs, miracles happen, I'm cheering. 37% of you said that. I'm jeering, I'm done with this team, just bring on baseball. You don't even want to think about it, 15%. And 48% of you said, it's impossible. There's no way they're going to be in the playoffs anyway. But for the half of you that still think there's a chance that the Bears will be in the playoffs, 18% said, I'm done with this team. I'm so ticked if they make the playoffs, I won't even be able to enjoy it. Which is, to be honest with you, I think that's where more of you are. Miracles happen, I'm cheering if they can advance. 37% of you say that about the 6-6 Bears they play tonight. Sam Panionovich watches sports for you and for me and comments on it. Hi, Sam. How are you?
Hey, John. Ready for Thursday night football. If you haven't seen the Bears enough in prime time, you get two more chances. Get a pretty big one tonight, too. Bears and Cowboys at Soldier Field.
Both teams are 6-6, right?
Yeah, and the Cowboys fighting for a little bit more because they still have an edge in their division. They're still in first place. Obviously, the Bears need a lot of balls to bounce their way. They have the Vikings and Packers in front of them, and they're a couple behind in the wild card. But if they win this game, they're technically still alive, even though Matt Nagy had a weird quote yesterday saying that they're not trying to make the playoffs or something like that, which I didn't quite understand. But you know every player on that field on both sides is really trying to win this one because if they lose, either team, it's a really uphill battle.
Who's going to win the game? Who do you think has the advantage tonight?
I really think that the Chicago defense in this stadium, I went back and looked at the numbers, King. Last 17 home games, the highest yardage total for any running back is 59 yards, which tells me a lot of things. This defense, when they're here in Chicago, in that stadium, in this weather, they bring it. And I think Zeke Elliott, we know that in years past he's been one of the best running backs in the league. He's going to have a hard time running this football in Chicago. Todd Gurley had a tough time last year. Remember the Rams were white hot? They went to the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah.
They came to Chicago. They didn't score 10 points. So I think points are really going to be at a premium here. I've got this thing, honestly, either way, I've got it 17-16. I think the Bears are going to get a chance to win it with Eddie Pinheiro. Don't cringe. Don't cringe. It's going to come down to, I think, a last-minute kick for Chicago. Will he make it? Ugh. I don't know, man. I think the total in this game is 43. I really like the under if I had to, like, pick it.
Yeah.
I like under 43 points, but I think it's going to come down to a field goal for Eddie Pinheiro, as much as it pains me to say that.
What's happened to field goal kickers in the NFL this year?
That's been a very interesting conversation, and you used to kick, too, so you know about the psyche and all that. No, but you remember when you score a touchdown, your team would score a touchdown, you come out for the extra point, and the ball is on the two-yard line, right? And it's like, oh, here we go, this is an automatic. If you go back and look at the statistics for kickers, ever since they moved that extra point back, because now it's no longer a chip shot, right? Now it's like a 33-yard extra point. I think a lot of things like the motion, the rhythm, the feng shui of being a kicker, because it used to be so easy. You come out for the extra point, boom, right down the middle. You got kickers shanking extra points now. And I think that sort of throws off the psyche of a kicker. Like, you used to see that ball go right through the middle two or three times a game. Now there are no such things. There's no such thing as an automatic for a kicker, and I think that's really played into it. I think the field goals have been missed because these kickers mentally are a little bit rattled. I know that it's their job. You got to make an extra point. You got to make a field goal. But when you see that, like a free throw shooter, when you see that ball go through, it makes it easier to make more. When you're an extra point guy and you're missing extra points, it makes those field goals in some weird way.
Yeah.
It makes them a little bit more tough.
That's interesting. So it translates. You think that the problem with the field goals is coming from the anxiety they have from the extra points.
And it's the loneliest position on the field, right? I mean, it's so tough because your team could fight and scratch and claw for 59, 60 minutes, and this game comes down to one kick off your foot. And I know people always say, well, that's their job. Well, okay, you go out there and do it, right? I mean, like, I've watched my friends try and kick 20-yarders and pull a hamstring and kick it into the ground. So it's not the easiest thing in the world, but they certainly didn't make the kicker's job easier when they moved that extra point back. Now it just makes everything else all that much tougher.
I'm not sure if that's made the NFL better or worse.
This sport, I'll tell you what, and I know you don't have a lot of time. We could talk about this at a different date, but this sport, I don't know how much NFL you watch this year. Between the quality of play and the flags, the product is not great. I mean, it's just not. It takes you 3.5 hours to watch a game. There's 20 flags. There's so many penalties. Guys are getting hurt every single week. It's just it's a tough watch, honestly. I've had a much more enjoyable year football-wise watching the college game because they let the people play. The refs stay out of the way. This NFL product, man, it's not great.
We don't have much time. You're right, Sam. So you say Bears are going to win something like 17-16. You think it might be a Pinheiro field goal that it comes down to. The Bears are still in the hunt if they win this game. They go to 7-6 with, what, two more games to play?
More games left. You got three more. Guess who you got? You got the Chiefs, the Packers, and the Vikings. So right. If you win out, you deserve to make the playoffs.
Man, can you imagine, as bad as this team has been, top to bottom, coaching to kickers, if they win out, and I appreciate what I just said, but if they win out, how weird will it be to see this team in the playoffs this year?
I totally see that happening.
Okay.
I sense a little sarcasm from Mr. Bertrand there. It would be something, but that's life in the NFL. I mean, we've seen teams go 0-2 and make the playoffs and make deep runs. I don't think it's going to happen. If I had to make a total on the amount of wins they're going to have, I'd probably make it 2. I think they're going to go 2-2 in these last four. That will not get them in. But King John, the worst place to be in sports is 500 because you're not good enough to win it all, but you're not bad enough to get better through the draft. But then again, the Bears also traded all the draft picks away, so they're screwed no matter what.
Well, on that happy note, I'll let you go. Thank you, Sam.
All right, King. See you later.
That's Sam Panionovic. Steve, I'm getting text messages today about the law in Illinois that says a person cannot be smoking marijuana after the 1st of January in a place where they could reasonably be expected to be observed by others.
Yeah, that was odd to me. So you can have a beer on your front porch, but you can't
correct
smoke a joint.
Correct. I don't understand the purpose of that. Look, you guys, if we're going to say it's okay to smoke marijuana, then let them smoke marijuana. What's your problem with that? I mean, I understand that they're not going to be able to smoke it inside your building or inside your business or inside your bar. They're not going to be able to smoke marijuana in the lobby of the building that you're in. They're going to be out there.
Even though they are already.
Well, and so then we've pushed the smokers out to that little enclave outside of the buildings, and you kind of got to walk through that. But you couldn't drink a beer there, so you can't smoke your marijuana cigarettes, say, just outside the bar. You can't drink beer walking down the sidewalk. We figured that out. You can't smoke marijuana doing with that, walking down the sidewalk. But in your backyard, on your porch at the apartment building you live on?
Or your house.
Yeah, I don't understand what the problem with that is.
I mean,
is.
I can see an apartment building maybe if you're sharing with others, but if it's your own house.
Well, do you think I should be able to go out?
And it's a nice summer night.
What about if I want to smoke a cigarette and I live in an apartment or condo, I go out on my back porch. Now, maybe the neighbors will pick up the odor of that, but I'm sorry, you guys, it's a legal product.
You might be banned from smoking it from your back porch. Maybe not.
What?
A cigarette.
That's not the law right now.
Okay, I don't know. I mean, there's some condos that are, and apartment buildings that are smoke-free.
I'd let you smoke tobacco on your back porch. And if that bothers the neighbor, then welcome to life in the 21st century.
So if you live next to a high-rise, you could never smoke a joint in your backyard because people could always be looking in your yard.
In fact, Steve, it sounds like in the backyard of your house, you've got a yard. If the fence is not high enough, if the neighbors can see it, because explain that to me. If the neighbors can see it, then you will be in violation of the law. That is ridiculous. Gwen, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Just real quick, you know, on these nice warm days or even cool days, people like to open their windows or balcony doors. If it's windy out and somebody across the way is outside smoking it, you got to close your door if you're not a smoker, you know, or your window. That's what I'm saying. Regardless of seeing them, you know, like people like to air their houses or their apartments out or condos.
So when I get to be king someday, Gwen, and I'm going to put you in charge of this, so, you know, I'm going to be busy. So I'm going to put you in charge of marijuana observation. You agree with the law that says you can't smoke a pot joint on the back porch. You can't do it in your balcony. And if I can see you, then you're in violation, correct?
That sounds about right, but I'm not going to sit there and call on anybody that's like, if it's really windy or something, like I said, I'm going back to, I want to freshen my house out.
Yeah.
And I want it blown in my house. That's it.
All right, Gwen, thanks for the phone call.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
As always, thank you, Steve Bertrand, 1133 on WGN Radio. Yeah, Dr. Fauci will, in fact, be in about this time Friday. Maybe just to catch up with me, she's a delightful lady, but when she came in, and it turns out, Steve, you may know this, most folks have eyes, and if you get a lot of floaters, or if you see flashes, or are you worried that you or your kids are spending too much time focused too intently on a computer screen, or a cell phone, or a smartphone, some sort of device, and you think, is this bad for my eyes? And as I recall, the doctor said that you staring at that screen all day long is not injurious to your eyes. Might not be good for your mental health. It's sure not good for your physical health because you're on your boom JJ instead of running around or walking around. But I don't think that's bad for your eyes. Those ballpark basic eye health questions tomorrow at 11:18. By the way, I was reading in that book, The Body by Bill Bryson, and he was talking about exercise and physical health. He said, here's a little tip to try and just get in a little more because we're so sedentary. We watch TV so much. We're binge-watching whole series in a single sitting. He said, if nothing else, get up and walk around during the commercials, which means you're not fast-forwarding through them. But he said, if you just do that, the average American will burn 240 calories a night or some dang thing, which I believe is half a ho-ho. But whatever, just get up and walk around during the commercials. March in place if you must. Okay, thanks for that. 11:34 now on WGN. Okay, you saw the headline the other day, Feds tighten work rules for food stamps. And where the first reporting on this I saw said 50,000 people in Cook County would be affected, this Tribune story said 688,000 adults could lose benefits nationwide, and about 50,000 maybe in Cook County. And my guess is that you are A-OK with this if you are a SNAP recipient. Food stamps. You're getting assistance to feed yourself. If you are also not working on getting a job, or working, in fact, Lord knows the unemployment rate is so low that they've waived the waiver, and now you have to be doing this. There's no reason not to be able to work. Or, if nothing else, volunteer. But the idea is we don't want people just sitting there living off the dole, taking the food stamps. Now, that is a USDA policy, and I think a lot of people personally agree with it. But then you talk to experts in the field, and a lot of them say it's not that simple. One of those experts in the field is in our studio. David Roth is here, Executive Director of the DuPage Federation on Human Services. David, welcome to the show. Welcome to the studio. How are you?
Thank you, John. I'm doing very well. Appreciate the chance to be here.
That's my sort of assessment of where we are on this. Jump in there. Based on what I've said, what do you want to say?
Well, let me start by addressing the two different numbers that you put out there. Right now, the pace of policy changes being proposed through the federal government, through the USDA, is very fast and frequent. It's very difficult to keep up right now with all the changes and what they mean without some kind of a scorecard, even for folks who are working in the field full time. It's that complex.
Yeah, I'll bet.
So that makes it a challenge to react to these changes that first get proposed and then they get implemented. In a way that's going to help people maximize their ability to take advantage of the benefits that are there.
Well, the rule is always, if the unemployment rate is below 4%, right, then the idea is there's enough jobs for you to not have to sit there and wait for your SNAP card. You can go get a job and earn money yourself, right?
Well, so let me put a little different frame around that. Most folks who are single adults receiving SNAP benefits, that is the folks considered ABODs, the able-bodied without dependents, most of those folks, more than half of them, are workers. They're already workers. And some of them are working over that 80-hour threshold, so they will be okay with this rule change. They just have to be sure that they report it.
80 hours is the amount that you have to demonstrate that you're working per month
right.
to get SNAP benefits.
Right.
And these people are already doing that.
Right.
Most of them are. But there's this number of 50,000 people in the county that aren't.
Well, of those 50,000, many of them are working, and many of them are going to meet that 80-hour limit, but not most. Most of them will be in an in-between category. If you looked at them today, they might not be working, but they might get called tomorrow. They might have gotten called to work today, but a chronic back issue keeps them away from a job where they have to do heavy lifting for a day.
Okay, but I think what people hear, because that would not be an able-bodied person then, if you have a chronic back problem, if you're mentally unable, if you've got a lot of kids, if you're a senior citizen, this wouldn't apply to you then, right? What we want to see happen is people that are just sitting on the street corner or wherever they are and they don't want to work and they're happy to take. I don't know if that population that I'm describing exists, but that's, I think, what people are happy to see this law for, is to get those people off their butts and working like the rest of us. You know what I mean?
So let me also try a little different frame on that. I am, you describe me as an expert. I'm kind of a policy analyst. I'm a social worker by training, but I've spent my career looking at data, analyzing policies. But the world of food security and food distribution, I was introduced to by a fantastic mentor. I'm going to call her out. Her name is Christina Quintana, and she operated for 25 years a food distribution program in the Little Village community. So hundreds of families a week would come through for free food. And she would get to know them. And she not only did the food, she did everything, transportation, job placement, housing finding. And when she introduced me to the program and gave me a tour, she said, Dave, the first thing you need to understand about the people who are coming in for food is that they have dignity. They want to work. They're motivated to take care of their families. They want to make a contribution in their community. And what she was saying is, it's our job to find ways to give them the supports they need to put together the free food at the distribution program, the income supplement through SNAP, or at that time it was food stamp benefits, income that they can get from work when work is available to them. All those things come together to allow them to achieve their dream, which is caring for their mother, their father, their children, their brother, their sister, and making a difference in their community. So that's the frame that kind of drives my policy thinking. The question is, how do we support those folks to achieve their dream, which is to work?
Without making them dependent on it. I don't think anybody denies anybody what you just described if they've fallen into hard times. But the times now... And by the way, I'm not even describing my opinion about this. That's not relevant. I'm just telling you what I think the law is and how it's being applied currently. And that is, the times now are, most people don't need the Band-Aid. They can get something that's more permanent. Is that not true?
Well, yes. You know, here I'm going to come with my a little different frame again. It is the law. The work requirement is the law. And that was established over 20 years ago when the country did this welfare reform change. Since that time, the SNAP benefit has become an enormous and important support. As other supports have drifted away, cash support's gone. Many social supports have been taken away.
So you like this program, and you probably aren't thrilled about the fact that we're below 4.9% unemployment. At 3.9, this rule goes into effect. You're not so crazy about that. Is that correct?
Well, I believe that the program is very good. SNAP benefits, there's a ton of evidence now that they build nutrition, health, well-being all across the age spectrum. They bring great benefits to our community. And they're an essential support now for very low-wage workers who are doing the work that we want. They're caring for our parents as home health aides. They're serving us in the retail shop and in the restaurants. Many of those folks are eligible for those SNAP benefits, and we need them to have them so that they have a place to stay, so that they have transportation to get to work.
So they're not spending money on food. They have money for gas and for rent. And so forget about the people that are chronically unemployed, they're not hitting the 80. If you're working 100 hours a month, you can still qualify for SNAP, and you certainly support that. You think that's a good idea. That's a good use of
that's
the
money. That's good. And the best way for us to reduce the SNAP rolls is the way that it has been happening up until now. Since the economic recovery started, SNAP rolls are diminishing every year. Why? Because people are working more, they're motivated to work more, and they're getting more income, and the rolls diminish on their own.
I want to read you a tweet that somebody put out today about, okay, should that person be able to have a car, and how nice or how valuable should that car be able to be if they're a SNAP recipient? I think this is relevant. I want your reaction to it in a minute. You can also join the conversation, 312-981-7200. Pamela, we'll get to your call and the rest of you next on WGN. We're talking about that story in the paper this week. There's been a few of them, have you noticed, about how SNAP recipients will not necessarily be able to get the food stamps or the SNAP card, if you will, that they previously did, because unemployment is so low now, at least in some counties, in a lot of counties, that it's going to be more difficult for them to do it. It's not a new law. The law has always said that if the unemployment rate is above 4%, then there's a waiver. But if it goes below 4%, then you have to demonstrate that you're working, volunteering, or working hard on getting a job, like 80 hours of work a month, say 20 hours a week. We asked David Roth to come into our studio and talk a little bit about this, executive director of the DuPage Federation on Human Services. David, the scenario I was describing, I saw a tweet this morning and it said, another rule is that if your assets are over $2,500, you don't qualify.
The exact numbers I'm not going to be able to quote you, but yes, there are asset limits.
So if I have a house, or if I have too nice a car, or too much stuff in my garage or whatever, and somebody chooses to ascertain that, then okay, I guess then I should sell that stuff to buy food, goes the thinking. I mean, that strikes me as a little odd. If you want somebody to get off the public dole, get them a good functioning car. Don't ask them what their car is worth and tell them that they can't have that. That's my reaction to that. Do you understand?
That's, and then you're on point. And so our home base is in DuPage. where a car is an absolute necessity to manage a life, to get to a job, and if you are someone who needs two jobs to get by and you need to drop the children off at daycare and at the school, you cannot do that without a vehicle. You need a working vehicle. So one of the best anti-poverty strategies is equipping inexpensive vehicles to be in folks' possessions so that they can do those things and build a life. I wanted to, if I could, reference DuPage County as a launching point to address this issue of aren't the jobs available? So there are many moving pieces now around food stamp or SNAP eligibility. One of those was implemented in January of 2018. DuPage County lost the waiver for the time limit for the single adults. So we were implementing this change 2 years ago. We had 4 months' notice, and we pulled out all the stops. We're an organized community. We got the Department of Public Human Services together. We got our private food distribution folks together, the People's Resource Center in Wheaton, and Loaves and Fishes in Naperville, the Northern Illinois Food Bank. We all got together and said, what needs to happen? We put together a plan. DHS contacted the SNAP beneficiaries to tell them of the change. We trained staff on what those changes would mean. We were laser-like focused on helping those who were working to know they needed to get to 80 hours and how they could get there. How do you do that? Laser-like focus on those who had disabilities to say, what do you need to get that documented? So we started this process with about 5,000 folks who were in that category of losing the benefit because of a time limit.
Yeah.
About half, a little better than half of those, stayed on the rolls. Those efforts worked. But 2,000 or more were dropped from the rolls over a series of successive months because they could not demonstrate the disability or the work hours.
Go back for a second. So you said for a little over half it worked, meaning you were able to get them enough hours of employment. Say they were able to find 60 or 70 hours. You were able to communicate to them you need to find 10, 15 more hours of work a month in order to continue to get SNAP benefits. And that effort worked, correct?
Right. Yeah, and so I can't claim credit for raising those hours, but we informed folks of what they needed.
And then they worked harder on the second job or got a second job to make sure. And then who are the people that fell through the cracks?
So that's what is so important to understand. You will not find a county in Illinois that has a better employment capacity. There are jobs. There
than DuPage.
Tens of thousands of jobs across the board. And the reason that folks are not getting into those jobs is not because they don't want to work. It's because we want you to be a cook. You got to stand all day. You got experience as a cook? Well, I'm sorry. I can't stand all day anymore. Okay, I'm going to have to look somewhere else. We'll hire you. You got to get your car so that you can be the delivery person. Oh, I don't have a car, but I'll see what I can work out. We'll hire you. You've been a laborer. We've got work here in the office. You're going to need to learn office IT systems. Oh, well, so you get the idea of what's happening. This is doable. You can overcome these barriers, but you can't necessarily do it in 3 months.
And that was the notice that you had when the employment dropped, and you folks have to do all of these things or you're not going to get SNAP benefits.
Right.
And then if they lose their SNAP benefits, then what happens to those people?
Well, so that just makes those next steps harder. I gave you three examples. The idea of getting a car after you've lost one-third of your income, oh, that's a pretty tough thing to consider.
Yeah. So when we first started this conversation, I'm imagining, I don't know, if it's somebody on the corner with a tin cup or somebody who we imagine is just being lazy and they're taking advantage of the system, what percentage of the recipients in your county or other counties would you say fit that description?
Oh my, I wouldn't hazard a guess of a number. Every one of us knows somebody in our lives who might take that kind of an approach, but overwhelmingly, as I've worked in this field and visited food pantries and talked to workers and gotten to know people, far and away, the rule is people are motivated. They want to do well for themselves and their families and their communities. And our job is to find out how to support them to move up.
Yeah, yeah. So back to the original question, and then I'll let you go. We're almost out of time. In our studio from DuPage County is David Roth. He's the executive director of the DuPage Federation on Human Services. Cook County's in the same boat as DuPage now. Unemployment's dropped, so these people now have to find work or they don't get their food stamps. Is it a card, a SNAP card? Is that what it is?
It is.
Yeah. This is not a new rule. It's been in place for a long time. Only now that unemployment has dropped, are we sort of having to deal with it, if you will. You've done it a little bit longer than others, but that's not a bad rule or regulation.
At a policy level, it's not the way to accomplish the goal we want. The rule was established back at the time of welfare reform, and there was a feeling then that that kind of punitive approach is what was needed. We've learned a lot in the last 20 years, and policy-wise, it's really not a good way to move people into work. The thing to do is to provide the supports, the opportunities, and reward their work. In this case, we're going to be dropping people with the lowest income levels. What little support they have to give them stability to move forward now, we're pulling that out.
John, I'm on disability. I went to work 20 hours a week at someplace, and they took my food stamps away because I was making too much money. What's your reaction to that?
Well, that's very unfortunate. We have to find ways to allow people to ratchet up their work and income without losing the entire benefit. And that's another one of those changes. I told you that there's a scorecard out there. There's another pending change which would roll us back even further so that someone in this gentleman's position will lose that benefit at an
even
earlier
sooner.
Time.
Yeah. John, we've all been in a grocery store and have seen a person with cart filled to the top with the best, most expensive food and use a SNAP card at checkout. That frustrates people, too. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I don't know their circumstances. It's hard for me to imagine when I understand the income limits that people are living under. So that's hard. That's a difficult one for me to respond to.
You don't think that happens very often?
I don't.
John, that person pulls out a wad of 50s and 100s to pay for items not eligible on SNAP. How do we solve that problem? Your observation of that is it's so infrequent that it's not really a big problem.
So I can tell you, I do the shopping for my family, and I've done that for 35 years. I've never seen that.
We are out of time. David Roth is the executive director of the DuPage Federation on Human Services. I'm going to call you again as this story continues to sort of grow and evolve. Thanks for coming into the studio
John.
This morning.
Thanks.
That wraps it up for today. John Williams, ready to visit with you again tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday, The Bright Side of Life. We used to do that in the afternoons when I was there 1 to 3. We'll bring it back to about this segment, minus 20 minutes, say around 11:40 tomorrow. But it's coming up on 12 noon. John Hansen, what are you doing?
All right. Well, you know the Ring doorbell apps? A lot of people doing the packages, and they want to track who might be taking them or not.
Yeah.
They have a really interesting partnership with police departments, and they're scaling it back a little bit after an outcry about how police, and plenty of them in the Chicago area, can ask people for those Ring videos to help solve crime. It's a fascinating story.
Yeah, if you had to pick one, I think I would like that, though I don't like the invasion of privacy. But
right.
Oh, what an interesting topic. Have a good show, my
Thank
friend.
You.